If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. Rick Mahn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, you better believe it. It's Tuesday, the 23rd of April, 2024. This is Locked and Loaded on TNT. Today's News Talk with me, the hostess with the mostess, one and only Rick Mahn, Ireland's finest. Ireland's finest. Yes, that's me. I happen to be the only Irish presenter, I think, on TNT. So by default, I'm Ireland's finest on here. So I'm going to take that and I'm going to run with it, even though it's a self-appointed title. Oh my goodness, what a blast we had in the first hour with Gemma and also with Hayden and also with the very own Basil Valentine. Calls for Basil Valentine to run as the Mayor of London. And why not? Why not? Surely, with all due respect to Basil, he couldn't do a worse job than Sadiq Khan is currently doing. But hey, apparently he can remain in situ for as long as people keep voting for him. So Londoners, be careful what you wish for and vote for, because you just might get it. What's coming up in this hour? Lots, in a word, lots. Justina Kowalska will be joining me for the second time on Locked and Loaded. We're going to be talking about the React Cas campaign that she runs for the residents of Bristol. They're currently feeling the pinch with regards to fines and totalitarianism and anti-driver campaigns that are going on there. Paul Kudnick will be joining me at the end of the show from France. We're going to talk about all sorts of things, actually. He's a very prolific writer for Winter Oak Press. He has a fantastic Substack, so we're going to look at some of his latest pieces. There's literally some days, you know, you're just so overwhelmed with stuff that's going on. And today's one of those days. There's so much happening at the minute. I actually want to look at Australia very briefly. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, talking about Elon Musk allowing misinformation to circulate on his social media platform. This whole business of these stabbings that happened in Australia last week, the coverage that they're currently getting on the X or the Twitter platform, there's people jumping all over them to try and get them taken down, and even for Musk to be jailed for allowing stuff like this to happen. Albo says the government is willing to do whatever is necessary to take on this arrogant billionaire who thinks he's above the law. I think that arrogance and thinking you're above the law would have described all the premiers of Australia that were enforced during the scandemic lockdown years. I'm thinking about Dan Andrews, arrogant, thinks he's above the law. Mark McGowan, arrogant, thinks he's above the law. Palaszczuk, arrogant, thinks he's above the law. Michael Gunner, arrogant, thinks he's above the law. And the list goes on and on and on. And let's not forget Gladys Berejiklian, lest we forget her, and Albanese and ScoMo, the whole bloody lot of them are arrogant and thought they were above the law. So it's a little bit hypocritical for Albo to come on and throw those insults in the direction of Elon Musk. And believe me, I am not an Elon Musk fan by any stretch of the imagination, but I have to call it hypocrisy and BS where I see it and hear it. And that's what I'm doing with regards to Albo. So Anthony, if you're on the Danny now, mate, you can give us a call if you don't like it and come on the show and debate with our Ricky Mahn. If you're afraid to, I understand, you just stay on the dunny. And if you don't know what the dunny is, I'm not going to go any further than that. But that's Albanese. And speaking of Australian horror stories, I only have two words. Jackie Lambie. Jackie Lambie, Australia's very own horror story on legs. This woman is an absolute menace. I believe she's a senator for Tasmania. She should belong in Tasmania. Stay there. There's an old animal called the Tasmanian Devil. It's quite notorious all around the world, I think. Jackie Lambie's political nickname should be the Tasmanian Devil. She's a complete menace. She wants Musk to be jailed. And she famously went on a foaming at the mouth rabid rant against Australians that refused to take the vaccine in the Senate, calling them all sorts of names. I tell you what, Jackie Lambie should be locked up. She should be locked up. And I'm not going to lie here, but I'm looking at my co-presenter, Gemma, and it looks like she's just died. Her head's tilted completely back. Just the mention of Jackie Lambie literally knocked her back in her seat. My God, this woman, Jackie Lambie. If you haven't checked her out, check her out, but my advice is turn the volume right down. Turn the volume right down because she knows how to rant. It does our Jackie Lambie. But anyway, what else can I say? But brace yourselves. Gemma Cooper's incoming here, and we'll be right back on TNT Today's News Talk.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm not going to lie, Gemma. I actually thought you took a turn there when I saw that head tilt the back, and it was back and back. And I thought, has she took a turn? You're all right, aren't you?
I was just doing a bit of gentle stretching because I don't know about you, but the studio works great. Don't get me wrong, I love broadcasting, but you're sat down a lot. Things begin to get a little bit stiff. So I thought I'd just do a little bit of what I thought was clandestine stretching, rolling my head right back like some sort of exorcist thing.
When I mentioned Jackie Lambie, your head went back like the Exorcist. Do me a favor, you see if you feel like doing that again for my benefit, just to keep me at ease. Give me a little thumbs up, stick a thumb up while you're doing that, just so I know you haven't took a turn. All right.
Oh, and that's very kind of you to look out for my well-being, studio to studio. Yeah, but yeah, in fact, it wasn't anything to do with the madness. It wasn't, you know, my reaction to hearing about the mad Australian politicians, no madder than any other politician around the world, it has to be said. But yeah, thanks for looking out for me, Rick.
You're welcome. You know, I enjoy our little chats here in the morning and chewing the fat over what's going on, the breaking news of the day. Before we dig into some of those stories that you brought in the last hour, here's another crazy one for you. This is just something that I literally just saw this morning here on the Irish Independent. University of Cork professor was fired after struggling to find a home in Ireland because it was so expensive. He sued them. The University of Cork said they've destroyed his career, and he's got 300 grand's worth of damages out of them. Basically, what happened was they appointed this guy to come from Denmark and work in University of Cork as a lecturer. But when he arrived, he couldn't find any accommodation, or at least something that wasn't suitable for him. So when he told the university that, they said, well, we're going to terminate your contract. If you won't find a place to live, you know, you can't commute from Denmark every morning. So off you go. So away he went. And then he said they've ruined his career. And he stuck the arm into them for 300 grand. Surely, Gemma, a university lecturer should have been able to find something. I mean, like, there's Irish people sleeping in their cars. They're sleeping in tents outside the International Protection Office in Dublin. Surely he could have found somewhere. He even bought himself a little two-man tent, a little butane stove, and I'm sure he would have been all right until he found somewhere suitable, wouldn't he?
Well, it's quite extraordinary that he managed to get £300,000 from the university and that he won that case, actually. That's a lot of money. You could probably buy a house. I don't know what the house prices are in the Republic of Ireland, so I don't get carried away with that one. But yeah, that's an unusual tale, not least that he won. It makes you wonder where he was house hunting. And that money, yeah, that's a lot of cash, third of a million.
Listen, if I say to you, Gemma, you need to go and find a new place to live, okay? You could say, well, Rick, there is nowhere. No, there's always somewhere, but there mightn't be a place that you particularly want to live in because maybe you have certain standards, you need certain location and all that sort of business, but there's always somewhere to lay your head. And this guy here, Dutch economics scholar, Dr. Wim Node, who was hired during the scandemic, said his career had been ruined by University of Cork because they invited him there. It's the third highest award ever made at the Workplace Relations Commission to an individual employee, and the record order by the tribunal against a public sector employer under the Unfair Dismissal Act of 1977. So it's the third highest paid ever. This guy claimed that he couldn't find a place, so they terminated his contract, and it's ruined his life. It's ruined his life. He had to go back to Holland with €300,000 in his pocket. Imagine your life being ruined in such a horrible way, Gemma. What an awful way to live, eh? Ruined. 300 grand richer, but he's ruined.
And that's come out of the public purse, if I'm not mistaken. You said the highest award in a public sector institute. Yeah. So the public purse has paid for that taxpayer money. Oh, it's this clown world, isn't it, Rick? It's a clown world that we live in. But well, there we go. Third of a million euros. Nice work. You probably won't have to work. That's the irony now. You won't have to work, will he?
That's right. Imagine that. But, you know, literally didn't do any work. Came over, didn't like the accommodation, maybe wasn't up to his standards, didn't want to shell out for it. So then he was told, well, go home. And then he cried, and then he got 300 grand. See, claims culture, It's see all these, you know, the way we talk a lot about house insurance is going up through the roof and car insurance is going up through the roof. Let me tell you how it works. Not you, maybe you know this, but for any of you out there that are scratching your heads, wondering, everything's done on postcode. And it's the people around you making claims that make it more expensive for you come renewal time. So depending on where you live, I used to work in the insurance industry, we had a postcode quotation book. This was in the days before computers. We used to have to go around with a little postcode book. And I would say, Gemma, what's your postcode? BT1. Okay, it'll be 50 quid for you for the year. Rick, where do you live? BT18. Ooh, that's a little bit dodgy. That'll be £200 for you. And then, oh, why is it more expensive for me? Because your neighbors are putting claims in hand over fist. They're setting fire to their carpets and they're getting claims and they're dumping paint on their sofas and getting new sofas. That's why your insurance is more expensive. And that's the way it works at the minute. Claims culture is killing us, Gemma, and insurance, and we're paying for it, unfortunately. And this bloody doctor of economics is just adding insult to injury, in my humble opinion.
It's great. It's great how the corporations just, you know, pass everything on to the consumer all the time. You know, they're making these mammoth profits purely from passing debt around on the bottom levels, you know. So you're paying for your neighbors end up paying for their neighbors, and the people at the top, the shareholders, the CEOs, the corporate whores, you know, they're loving it. It never, ever, ever do they see kind of any of the real kind of impact of their policies on people who are already struggling right across the UK, certainly, to make the money in their pocket go as far as they can, just put food on the table. The amount of people in the UK that do choose between heating and eating, that's a reality. That is a reality now. The levels of destitution, which are below poverty. I mean, I'm sure that most people, a lot of people are going without insurance, actually, because it's normally one of the first things to fall by the wayside if you haven't got any spare cash, which leads you in trouble later on. But that's why, because these policies and premiums just go up and up and up. Every corporation is the same, isn't it? Every single one of them. Fueled by greed. No compassion whatsoever.
Fueled by greed is right. And they'll think of nothing to step over someone or stick a knife in your back to make a little bit of extra profit. Speaking of profit, we talked in the first hour there about this Rwanda bill, obviously has passed through now. Young Hayden Appleby was on. We were talking about Sunak's moves to get people deported across to Rwanda. And of course, you and I have been talking about the story on and off now for the entire duration of your stay in TNT, which is over 6 months now. In fact, back as far as 2 years ago, I can remember when this was first fielded, discussing this, will they, won't they? Well, now finally, they've got it over the line. I mean, like, more money undoubtedly going into more people's pockets. The Rwandans are certainly going to profit for this. There's a hostel here. I'm just looking at a story. Hope Hostel in Rwanda has been ready to receive Britain's unwanted migrants now for a total of 664 days. No doubt they'll have been on a retainer to keep the rooms empty to receive the unwanted migrants, according to the Beeb. But in reality, they're getting paid whether or not they've got migrants in there or not. What are they complaining about?
Well, I doubt they are complaining. And it's a very nice hostel, however you want to describe it. It's very nice and in very nice grounds with very nice views over Kigali. And interestingly, David Curtin raised a very interesting point on his show a few hours ago about this bill. He said, if you actually look at the small print of the bill, it's for every 200 we send over to Rwanda, Rwanda then send some of its more vulnerable asylum seekers that they can't look after back to us. So it's a kind of revolving door because we provide better mental health services that maybe the Eastern African country can't provide. So they send. So it's not really going to change the amount of people here in the UK. It might change the status of the people coming in because we'll say, yeah, we will accept these people. It's part of the deal. But it won't change, actually, the number of people leaving and coming back through. It's really it's a shonky deal. It's a shonky deal, but it's an election winner for Rishi, or so he hopes. That's what he hopes. And and again, just to update you on the story that I broke at the top of the last hour about the tragedy in the channel, the small boats coming over. The whole point of this bill is to stop the small boats. We've got some more detail on the people that have died. It was actually a 7-year-old girl that died. She was among the five. Another four are now in hospital. And we've got unconfirmed reports that 100 people were rescued off the coast by the French Navy. And charity workers say, you know, there was two dinghies in the water suffering difficulty. So it wasn't just a one-off with five people. It was a big operation. Clearly, the weather was against them. But this is exactly what the British government don't want, you know, hours after passing this flagship bill, they're hopeful that everyone will stay on the shoreline. James Cleverly's come out, our Home Secretary, since this tragedy has happened and said this, he is going to do everything he can to smash the business model of the gangs bringing them over. And that's what the planes to Rwanda are all about. But we will then take Rwandan refugees. So the whole thing is vested government interests once again, much like corporations. You know, it's about protecting their interests and doing these deals and using our money to do it. Simple as that.
And then we're going to, in return, we're going to be taking on Rwanda's unmanageables when it comes to mental health, from, because allegedly we have better services. Well, that's another thing we talk about a lot here. There aren't adequate mental health services available for British people, for veterans suffering from PTSD, from children suffering as a result of the lockdown years, the mental torment that was inflicted upon them, and of course, having their heads scrambled by gender ideology at school. We can't take off our own mental health crises at the minute, let alone dumping Rwanda's needy on top of us as well. I don't know what to say about this one, but I can't imagine that this will be a positive thing in any way, shape or form, Gemma, but appreciate that extra layer to the old Black Forest Gâteau Rwanda cake that we're talking about here this morning, or I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But anyway, you get the point. You get the point. Layer upon layer upon layer. As old Paul Atreides said in June, he said, I see plans within plans. Yes, it's never very one-dimensional when it comes to these things. But Gemma, I appreciate all your input this morning. As always, we shall reconvene again tomorrow, Wednesday, I hope. And after the break, I'm going to welcome Justina Kowalska to the show again. And we're going to talk about ULEZ CAS zones in the UK here. Don't go away. Stay tuned for more on TNT, Today's News Talk.
TNT's Limbit Open.
Money is a problem for you. Does that make you into a communist?
Not at all, not at all. It's just the way that money is brought into circulation. You know, most people don't understand that concept. We live in a debt-based fiat economy. And the way that money is brought into circulation is basically out of thin air. You know, you go to the bank, you ask for a loan, a mortgage or something. The bank doesn't hold those funds within their vaults, whatever you want to call it, and then they literally press a button and that money gets brought into circulation through thin air through the Bank of England. They're given to that person, and then that person has to pay that money back with interest on top. So that whole concept of the way money is brought into circulation, it is a form of control.
Limbit, OPEC, and Today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, Today's News Talk, TNT. I'm very happy to be joined again on the Locked and Loaded show by the one and only Justina Kowalska. Justina, this is her second time here on the show talking to me. She runs the React CAS campaign. That's a Facebook group dedicated to raising awareness and trying to overthrow some of the measures that have been inflicted on the people of Bristol in particular with their CAS, or so-called clean air zones. Welcome back to the show, Justina. How are you doing this fine spring day?
Oh, I'm all right, thank you.
Good. Well, it's good to see you again. And you're smiling, which is a start, because I believe if you don't laugh, you cry sometimes. And there's a lot going on in the world at the minute. A lot of assaults happening upon our standards of living, upon our freedom to speak our minds, and of course, our ability to drive our cars as well. Now, let me ask you this question. Since the last time we spoke, obviously that was about maybe 3 months ago now. I think it was about January or February now. A lot of water has passed under the bridge. Has there been any improvements in the amount of restrictions that are currently on the people of Bristol, for example? And I know you've moved out of that area now, but you're still very much involved in what's going on there. Have things got any better? Have they stayed the same, or God forbid, have they got worse?
To be honest with you, from what I can hear from our group members, the things got even worse. You know, when we spoke last time, drivers mainly dealt with PCN related to Clear Air Zone fines. At the moment, it got even worse because they've been, you know, threatened by bailiffs. So I heard even about the charity organizations who are getting letters, who are getting, you know, letters or visits from bailiffs not paying, you know, the fines. Yeah.
And tell me this. I mean, I'm looking at the website. So Bristol have a Clean Air Zone that they have, so-called Clean Air Zone. It operates 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and like other zones of its type within the UK, it's designed to lower harmful emissions in the air by discouraging drivers of old petrol and diesel vehicles from entering the city. But it doesn't stop that, because you can still pay the fine, or you can still pay the daily charge and enter there, and you're still polluting the atmosphere. So if we're being honest about this, if Bristol was really concerned about your health, if you were a resident of Bristol, they would just ban your car completely, saying, Justine, it doesn't matter if you give us £500 a day, you're not driving that car in there because you're wrecking the atmosphere and you're killing people. That's their narrative. But the reality is, if you're prepared to pay, you can still pollute the atmosphere and kill people as long as you pay your money.
Yes, of course, that's absolutely true what you said. And it's not only your opinion or my opinion. This is what people are saying, that it's another, you know, cash cow implemented on people who live in Bristol, who visit Bristol. On top of that issues you mentioned, there is another thing, that you don't have to necessarily enter the zone. You can still drive around. And people are raising more and more concerns about the areas which are around the zone. The traffic is absolutely horrendous. And they are concerned that, despite the fact that more polluting cars is entering the zone, they are still driving around. So, to be honest with you, it doesn't really make sense at all.
No, effectively, all they're doing is they're pushing the pollution to another part of the town or to the outskirts of the town. They're not reducing it in any way, shape, or form. And you mentioned there about bailiffs and people that aren't paying these fines in time. So this is a notice that they put up to say failure to pay the daily fee will result in a penalty charge notice. But the city, Bristol City Council, claims that 71% of vehicles entering the zone meet the required minimum standards, which means only older vehicles are being charged. But that's still 30% of cars. So roughly speaking, 3 out of every 10 cars that are driving into Bristol are being charged on a daily basis. And what they're saying is, well, listen, if you have a problem, just change your car. But it's not that easy for people that are already struggling financially to say, okay, then I'm going to buy myself a hybrid vehicle. I'm going to buy myself a nice new low emission vehicle. What if you haven't got the money to do that? That means you're stuck.
Yeah, so to be honest with you, council is saying that they provided help to people, yeah, like, you know, grants and loans, but you need to pay it back. And what can you do with a £2,000 grant? Can you actually afford to buy a new vehicle? I'm not talking about the car. I'm talking about, you know, bigger vehicles for tradespeople, like vans. Can you show me a van for £2,000, which would be, you know, Clear Air Zone compliant? I highly doubt it.
Yeah, exactly. And another part of this here, just as we're run up to our headline break here, is the government sets legal limits for air pollution, which is why a number of clean air zones have been introduced in the UK. So the government decides what is acceptable or not, what is legal or not. But the thing is, this is not applied on a blanket basis across the UK. So, for example, where I live, up in Northern Ireland, there are no clean air zones. There is no air pollution charges here whatsoever. Whereas if you go to Bristol, there's a clean air zone. If you go to London, there's a ultra low emission zone. If you go to Glasgow, there's another different type of zone. So there's no uniformity with this in the UK at the minute. So it seems to be the councils are free to adopt this if they feel like it. And of course, if they feel it's going to make them a lot of money, they're doing it. But a lot of the UK doesn't have any of these zones at all. So where's the balance here? Where's the uniformity?
Yeah, so government gave local authorities a free hand to decide how they're going to, you know, lower the air pollution. And some of the cities disagree with chargeable zones. The greatest example is Leeds, who started, to act, fast enough. And they proved that implementing a chargeable zone is not needed anymore. They invested in public transport, for example, and they contacting the local businesses as well to make them aware about the plans. So they achieved their target, so there was no need to implement that zone anymore. So, you know, for example, Greater Manchester, who was thinking to implement the biggest clear air zone in the whole Europe, dropped their plans as well, thanks to people.
Thanks to the pushback on that. That's what I wanted to ask you about, too. We've got to take a little headline break, but what I want to look at now is obviously some places have not proceeded with it, like Greater Manchester, as you've explained, but other places still are very much clinging on to it, like London, for example, and like Bristol. So what I want to ask is what can be done potentially to try and overturn this? What will need to be done to be able to overturn this? Or if anything could be done for that matter, what kind of pressure we can apply to local councils to maybe get this overturned? We'll look at some possible solutions when we come back after this short news headline break here on TNT, today's news talk.
Have you heard the news?
The news.
Now, TNT Radio News.
This is the news.
Matt Boylan with your TNT headlines. Australia's Prime Minister's lashed out at ex-boss Elon Musk as the billionaire goes into battle to protect free speech.
I just find it extraordinary that this bloke thinks he's above the law.
The UK will start detaining migrants within days after plans to send them to Africa was approved by Parliament.
No ifs, no buts. These flights are going to Rwanda.
And 10 people have been killed in a horror mid-air collision involving two military helicopters in Malaysia.
We're the pin-up boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, Justina, actually, before we go to solutions, one other negative thing to do with this CAS zone in Bristol is it's very off-putting, maybe for people that want to travel into Bristol, maybe to do some shopping, to maybe boost the local economy. There's a report here that was published in the Bristol Post just a few days ago saying a first-time visitor to Bristol says the CAS zone gives a bad first impression of the city after he was left with two fines. He visited Bristol earlier this year for the first time, but failed to spot the signs and ended up with a total of 240 quids. Worth the fine simply for traveling into Bristol, maybe visiting friends, maybe boosting the local economy, doing a little bit of shopping. Not exactly what you would call an incentive to get footfall into the town if somebody leaves with 240 quids worth of nasty fines.
Yeah, so I read this article. I went through the comments as well on original Bristol Life post. I shared that article to React Gaz Facebook group, and people's opinion is pretty much the same, that it stops people from coming to Bristol. There are, like, you know, harsh opinions. People are saying that it means clearly it sends a message: we don't want you here. We don't want you here, or keep out. And people are saying that not only, you know, Bristol, but the whole country, the whole UK, is a joke, because we've got, you know, biggest world polluters like China or India, but it's tiny little country on the island who is saying that they will improve the air quality and they will look after, you know, about climate change by implementing charges and putting more fines and taxes on people. It doesn't make sense, really.
No, it doesn't make any sense. So you would have to ask yourself the question, well, why are they doing this in the first place? And of course, none of these zones are particularly popular with people that live in them. So obviously, when you see London, you had what were called ULEZ Blade Runners. So there were people going out and actually vandalizing the cameras. Some of them were cutting down the cameras. And of course, we don't advocate that people destroy public property. We certainly don't advocate that, but it gives an indication of just how unhappy people are with these zones. And for example, in Bristol, with this group that you run, the React Cas campaign group on Facebook, you know, what are the options that are being looked at? Because obviously there's a lot of people aren't happy with that and it's still in force. Is there any way that there can be a pushback against this? Public demonstrations, maybe mass petitions, whatever, refusal, mass non-compliance to refuse to pay fines. Are there any solutions being pumped out for this, or are people just accepting that this is the way that it is?
Well, looking at the fact that in the first year, nearly 250 fines a day.
Yep. Oh, we just lost your sound there. Hopefully we'll be able to get that one back. Oh. Oh, okay. Well, we're just waiting for Justina. Just give us the thumbs up if we've got the sound back again there. Hopefully, can you hear me now, Justina? Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you now. I do apologize. Yeah.
No problem at all. These technical things happen. So what we were saying was about possible solutions. You were saying that 250 people a day were being fined whenever this thing actually kicked off. So what's the pushback against that then, or what steps are being taken to try and push back against this?
So in Bristol, people started actually, you know, to challenge the PCNs and proved that Bristol City Council was incompetent when it was about, you know, the wording of the letters. And this is how the people in Bristol have been fighting with these fines. That was actually the way which Birmingham did as well, and it's still doing. Almost 50% of PCNs were written off. So you can do it, you know, many ways, just to say no to charges and fines. London seems to be a bit more active, I would say. And I can hear from people that they are trying actually to encourage voters to not vote the parties who are actually responsible for implementing these clear air zones or ULEZ zones.
Well, let me say this, just one last thing before we are out of time here. I was in Bath last year, okay, on a visit to Bath in England. And I remember the lady who took me to the airport in her taxi. She said that she had to get a new vehicle because taxi drivers were being fined if they didn't have compliant vehicles. But if it was a private vehicle, she wouldn't have to pay the fine. So it seemed to be they were targeting people that were making a living using their cars, in her case, taxis. But I understand that in Bristol, they don't have that differentiator there. If you are a private vehicle or a commercial vehicle, you still have to pay the fine. And again, does this not highlight the discrepancies in this so-called policy to try and keep everybody safe, where if you go to Bath and you're a private driver, you don't have to pay their clean air zone fine. If you're a commercial vehicle driver, like a taxi, you do. But if you go to Bristol, everybody's tarred with the same brush. So surely there should be a case to be made here that if one rule is applicable, for example, in Bath, the same rule should be applicable in Bristol or in Manchester or in Glasgow or London, wherever it is. There's just no uniformity with this. It's just a madness, really.
You know, that's very confusing for the drivers. And the funny thing is that when your car might be compliant to enter the London zone, it might be not compliant to enter clear air zones, because ULEZ was implemented a few years back, earlier than CAS, and clear air zones are more strict when it's up to vehicle emissions. That's the one thing. The other thing is that we've got four different types of clear air zones, and it was pretty much up to the local authorities which type of the zone will be implemented. So, for example, Bristol and Birmingham are the only cities, except of London, which are charging private cars because they are decided to implement CAS type D, when BAF zone is CAS type C, which doesn't charge private cars. The joke is that if it's the same type of the vehicle, it's the same make, model, the same year, and I'm talking about BAF at the moment, and it's registered as a business vehicle, it will be charged. But if it's a private car, it won't be charged.
Yeah. It just does not make any sense. And that's why I'm thinking, if there is any pushback in this, you should be able to point the finger across the bath and say, well, private vehicle owners are not being charged there. Why are we being charged in Bristol, for example? That's just maybe another tool you could use in the arsenal of the fight back against this. Justina, we're out of time on this one right now. I want to give you a big thanks for coming back on and keeping us updated with the work that you're doing. Check out the React CAZ, React C-A-Z, campaign Facebook page. And if you're in the Bristol area and this is something that causes your concern, feel free to join that group and see what they have to say. So big thanks to you this morning, Justina. Hope you have a great day going to do whatever you're doing. We've got to take another break right now and have another guest coming in, Paul Kudinek from France. So please stay tuned. Don't go away. This is TNT, Today's News Talk.
Hi. I'm your retirement fear. But don't be scared. You're still in pre-retirement.
Pre-retirement? Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pretirement.org.
Retirement savings options? Potential tax breaks?
Yep. Boo.
Oh, I could build up savings for my side hustle. This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
Rick Mon is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, we still have more to come before the top of the hour. I'm very happy to be joined again by my old sparring partner from France, the one and only Paul Kudinek. Paul is the main writer and contributor to Winter Oak Press. Fantastic publication. You can go on there and find out everything that he's published, which he makes available for free, actually, although I would encourage you, if you can, to get on there and support him if at all possible. Paul, welcome back to Locked and Loaded. How are you doing this fine spring morning?
I'm doing fine, thanks, Rick. Yeah, nice to be back.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear it. You know, I've got a few things that I'm just going to throw right at you here this morning. I noticed a post that you had highlighted in your Twitter or your X feed. I think it was yesterday. This was a post from somebody else, actually, but it caused me to pause and think. It said, anarchy is spontaneous order. Okay, anarchy is spontaneous order. Statism is organized chaos. Okay, so anarchy, statism, and as we look around us in the world at the minute, Paul, I think it's fair to say most people are saying it's crazy out there. It's like a lunatic asylum, and the lunatics have taken over the asylum. It seemed to imply that everything's going on randomly at the minute, but in reality, what's happening at the minute at the hands of our, you know, globalists, playmasters, is it's very much they're working to a plan, I believe, a controlled demolition plan. It's anything but chaotic out there. I think they're very much in control of what's happening, although it appears to be chaotic from the outside. Is that a reasonable summary?
Yes, definitely. I mean, they use the word disruption as to describe a certain way of investing, of making money. It's it is deliberate playing with things, shaking things up, turning everything upside down in order to come out of it with a different setup that suits them better, and also I think to profit financially from the various stages of that collapse or disruption or change.
Yeah, without a doubt, there's a lot of profiteering going on at the minute. Just that whole business about statism as organized chaos, without a doubt, things are chaotic in the world right now, but be under no illusion, it's organized chaos. Anarchy, you describe yourself as an anarchist, is described as being spontaneous order. For somebody maybe that's out there scratching their head or looking at alternatives to what the current norms are at the minute and say, well, anarchy, that's something that the Sex Pistols sang about back in the 70s, anarchy in the UK, and Megadeth covered it. What, they know the badge, you know, the A with the circle around it. For those people that are maybe exploring alternate viewpoints in the way societies could be run, tell us a little bit about the anarchist's approach, or is it as bad as the press would make it out to be?
No, there's a lot of misunderstanding of what anarchism is about, not only from those who aren't anarchists, but also I'd say from people today who call themselves anarchists, who have not really grasped what it means, because it's a classical philosophy that sometimes is traced way back before it was called anarchism.
You can trace it way back. Some Christian anarchists think that it's a continuation of Christian thinking, of the teachings of Jesus Christ,
and also other people look at Taoism. And all sorts of, or Sufism, all sorts of traditional philosophies, which are based on the idea of a natural order that, left to ourselves, we, like all other species on the planet, will live the way that we are innately intended to live, and which includes cooperation, mutual aid with other people, obviously, because we're not just random individuals who can go off and do our own thing at all times, although we must. I would say that also we have to be free to follow our own consciousnesses. Yeah. And, you know, that's also part of being human, part of human nature. But is it that overall human nature provides a solid, coherent, stable, long-term way of living. Mm-hmm. And that the emergence of some sort of power center, whether that's the state or the money power, which uses the state to impose its requirements from above, rather than respect the requirements as felt and voiced and agreed by the people at the grassroots level, and that's when you start getting chaos.
You know what, listening to that, it sounds good. The problem I see with it is people, okay? So by their very nature, you know, we have it within us that we can exist in a certain way. I agree with that 100%. But the problem with humans is there's always going to be that guy. There's always going to be that little group of people that start to form together in a clique, even within that scenario that you've described there, and say, well, you know what? I think maybe I'm a little bit more qualified than you to talk about this issue, or I think I'm a little bit better to you to run this type of business. And is it not the main problem that humans are their own best friends, and as well as that, they're their own worst enemies, because you're always going to get that guy or that girl who has these ulterior motives start to bubble up and will look for opportunities to further their position within whatever pecking order exists, even within an anarchistic society?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously what has happened. That's what's got us where we are now.
Yeah.
And it's never the human... Although I'm talking about a tendency to mutual aid and cooperation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, other than that's a tendency, that sort of, you know, 55%, and there's the 45% in which people are awkward and, you know, seek to have some sort of control or power over others, even if it's informal. And that does happen, of course, even in, you know, political anarchist groups. There are, you know, there are these tendencies for people trying to take control of it. But I mean, I see it as... So anarchism as not being something that is static. It's not an idea of how something will be and will be permanently, and it's guaranteed it's going to stay like that. It's the idea we are free, and we want to have this idea that we were always going to be alert to the dangers of having people seizing control and ordering around the rest of it. So it's a sort of way of seeing things and of being on our guard against that sort of thing. And then the more that is enshrined in our thinking, the more we can do that.
You know, the one thing that is really getting me at the minute, right, that's really getting me at the minute about this whole business of the small, small, minute minority of people at the minute are holding a lot of the world's wealth, are existing a lot of influence upon the world. And we have the numbers. We have billions of people, billions and billions of people that if united together, could end all this madness tomorrow morning, could end today if enough people got together and put their minds to it. Is it not the classic example, though, of, you know, divide and conquer playing out before our very own eyes? There's so much fragmentation at the minute in society. So many groups of people are being pitted against each other. And in reality, the attention is going away from that small amount of puppet masters out there, the people that are controlling the vast majority of the world's wealth, power, and influence. While we're fighting and squabbling amongst ourselves over various issues, the attention is very much taken away from them. And hence, they're still in situ at the minute.
Indeed, I think that's very much part of their modus operandi. In fact, well, and one part of that is to make it unacceptable to say that they exist, which is the situation we've got. Really, is if you say there is what you just said, that there is one small group of people with a lot of wealth and power in the world who control everything. I mean, you're immediately, you know, that's badly seen by society. You're a conspiracy theorist, you know,
extremist.
Insane, you know, extremist. So that's that. That was that first thing. And the second thing is that the people can't agree on what they are either. You know, that people use different terms to describe them. So somebody, you know, people, the sort of circles I've always moved in until recently, it was always, we would talk about capitalists, the global capitalist class, but there's lots of people out there who don't think they're called capitalists, that capitalism is a free market and these people are crony capitalists or they're communists even, you know, and it's all referring to the same people, but the confusion of the terms helps the division. And then plus there'll always be, I mean, there are natural divisions between people as well, but I think they're deliberately extenuated and sown. The division is sown purposely so that we spend all our time criticizing each other and hating each other rather than looking up and saying, well, hang on, who's actually behind all this?
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, those people that are up there are having a good old chuckle at the minute because they're just simply doing what they've done since time immemorial, pitting people against each other, diverting the focus away from themselves while they continue to do what they're doing. There's one article, for example, many people listening to this will be familiar with BlackRock. This is just one example here, but this was a piece that was published in the old Daily Mail yesterday, and God forgive me, Lord, for reading the Daily Mail here, but it's the headline reads, The Rise of the Giant Fund. Like it's something that's just happened recently here, how companies like BlackRock and State Street are taking over Wall Street with some managing assets worth more than, for example, the entire German economy. So what this article is really saying is, hey, people, you might want to be aware that companies like BlackRock are rising up. they're not talking about how long companies like this have existed or how long dynasties, family dynasties have existed that have been behind wars, engineering wars, military industrial complexes. It's almost like the pennies dropped here, so they feel that they want to share it with people at this time. You know, and how many people will even pay attention to this, Paul? How many people that know who BlackRock are outside of, you know, maybe the circles that you move in, they'd be scratching their head and say, nah, never heard of them. No idea who they are. Don't know anything about the Rothschild family. Know nothing about the Rockefellers. Is this not the problem? The ignorance is bliss mentality model has really got us into this position that we're in at the minute.
It has. Well, it's a good sign if the Daily Mail is starting to talk about it. You know, it means that there'll be a few more people out in the streets of Great Britain who will be and United Kingdom will be aware of the name, if nothing else, even if they haven't read the article. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's a small slice of it. I mean, it's just also the point is that's just the private side of the so-called public-private partnership, which isn't really a partnership to me, because it's a beast with two heads, or at least two heads. The public and private are the same thing manifesting in different ways, you know. So but it's a way into the question. We've all got to start somewhere, and if people can see that these BlackRock, State Street and Vanguard have, you know, seem to be the sort of institutional shareholders behind virtually everything, which is in itself is alarming, even if you don't go any further in history or in terms of in the institutions of the world, as well as just the corporations.
Yeah, there's another article that I want to touch on here. And by the way, you can check this out on the Winter Oak website, which is winteroak.org.uk. Now, this was a piece that you posted yesterday, actually, and it's got a great title to it. It says, "The World Out of Kilter, Occupation and Zombification," which is sounds like an old death metal album title from back in the 1990s, if you ask me. And that gets you my respect right off the bat. But underneath the piece, you have a picture. It's a black and white picture of four people sitting on a tube, by the looks of it. In fact, three of them are completely engrossed in their mobile phones. The fourth guy has got his arms folded with a semi-disgusted expression on his face, staring straight out of the train carriage. And you open it up by saying, "The kind of society I long for is an organic one in which people live the way they see fit, guided by their own inclinations and their customs. Traditional societies often look to village elders or wise women, other respected individuals, to help steer their decision-making." Where are the village elders of today? Are they not being mugged and stabbed and trodden upon and demonized and vilified by the government? That I agree, by the way, with what you've said. It works when it works. But where are the wise old heads of the day? Are they being given a platform? Are they being listened to? Are they being trodden down?
Well, I go on to say, actually, in the article, that they're being ostracized and ridiculed, you know. People, well, it's been going on for centuries, really. I mean, when I talk about wise women, you think about all the witch hunts and that traditional wisdom that these women had was regarded as unacceptable to the mainstream society at the time. And so today, anyone who challenges the modern contemporary way of speaking is dismissed. Now, what the terms they use today are slightly different from before. Before, it would have been an old fogey or a little Englander or a good looking, somebody who's resistant to modernity and wants to take us back to the Stone Age or something. And now it's, because I'd assume myself as one of these people that is speaking against the contemporary outlook. Now we're extremists and reactionaries or far right, you know. And the fact that you're an anarchist doesn't mean that you can't also be accused of being far right in this insane world we're living in. So,
you know, I'm listening to you and I'm looking behind you as well. And behind you, you've got a case, and it's full of what looks like to me books. You know, books. Soon it'll come to the position whereby somebody could look at a video here and say, this guy Kudnick, He's got printed books behind him. He must be a danger. We've got to keep an eye on that kind of guy, you know, somebody that actually reads, somebody that actually expands their knowledge base, somebody that actually delves into the printed word, could be heading towards an Orwellian or Ray Bradbury Fahrenheit 451-esque material, whereby you could actually be flagged up because you have a fully stocked bookcase behind your head. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, that's certainly the danger, that we could end up there. And I'm sure that there are, you know, there are books there that, you know, would be considered unacceptable for one reason or another. I mean, pretty much anybody who says, who talks any sense is regarded as beyond the pale. So, you know, I'm sure there'd be plenty of ammunition for hauling me up before the Inquisition.
I present the evidence today. He has a book in his bookcase. In fact, he's got five. He must be a dangerous revolutionary type that must be silenced at all costs. But of course, listen, they can't silence it, because even if they do take your books away, even if they do put you in prison, you can still speak and you can still exert an influence. And that's the one thing, Paul, I think they're hell-bent on at the minute, is stopping any kind of a positive critical thinking influence to be exerted upon people. Hence, we see the massive spike in censorship that we're currently seeing at the minute. But thankfully here, you're always free to speak your mind, as you well know, and you can come on here and say pretty much just whatever the hell you like. We're pretty much up to time in this one. I can't believe how quickly the time goes when we're talking a little bit of sense here. But please check out Paul on X or Twitter at Winter Oak Press. That's on the Twitter or X platform. And more importantly, check out the website, winteroak.org.uk. You can download all the books that Paul has written and all the articles that he's written, access them all for free of charge. But he is an independent, so if you can find your way to give him some support there, that would be, I'm sure, very much appreciated. So, Paul, the metal's playing in my ears. I'm not hearing things. That means it's time for me to wrap it up and get off and let someone else come on. So big thanks to you for your input today. It's always a pleasure talking with you, and no doubt we'll talk again sooner or later. James Freeman's incoming here. I'll be back in the morning with more Locked and Loaded. Stay tuned to TNT. We'll be right back.